Face the hammer.
Where's the hammer?
It's on a different
floor. Is it go up on the other floor. Somebody go up there and stop the hammering. Stop the hammering. I'll go down to the floor myself and stop it. Keep the commercial break going. Call Phil Griffin. I don't care who the you have to call. Stop the hammering.
Oh, I love that one. Stop the hammering, Lawrence O'Donnell. Oh, that is my new favorite video clip from now on. Or in this case, audio clip. Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to Thor's Hammer Radio. I'm your host, Alex Thorson. You follow me on Facebook, Thor's Hammer Radio. Follow me on Twitter, Alex Thorson, at Thor Hammer Radio. Follow me on Minds.com, at Thor's Hammer Radio. And, of course, on the website, www.thorshammerradio.com. Well, I've been out for a while. A lot of stuff going on in between. Part of the reason is that I have a full-time job, so this is a hobby for me. And plus, there's been several other things that were going on. In between my last podcast, we had natural disasters, we had shootings, and all sorts of stuff. In fact, my father was actually caught in middle of Hurricane Irma there, rolled through. He's okay, thankfully. But he lives down the islands there, and they got pretty messed up. But he's okay, so thankfully my family's all right. Well, the news. So news just comes out a mile a minute. It would be almost impossible for me to cover everything that's been happening in the last, well, in time span of 45 minutes for a podcast here. Well, I'm going to focus on three main things. So the first one I want to focus on is Israel. Trump just recently declared that they recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. I'm going to get into that in the first segment. In the next segment, I'm going to talk about something which is near and dear to me, which is law and order. We're going over the Kate Steinle recent court decision from San Francisco, which is atrocious. And then in the final segment, I'm going to touch on a few things regarding the investigation that Robert Mueller's doing. And since it's unavoidable, talk a bit about the sexual assault and harassment crap that's been going on throughout Congress and the media and all that. But anyway, to start off, so Israel. So Donald Trump officially declared, not declared, but recognized Jerusalem as the capital of Israel, which it is. It is the capital of Israel. It's the ancestral capital of the Jewish people. Has been for over 3,000 years. For those of you kind of not too familiar with the history, basically, way back in antiquity, Jerusalem was actually two different cities, and then it ended up combining into one city. And it's been the ancestral capital of the Jews for over 3,000 years. Understand something, Islam has no connection whatsoever to Jerusalem. They have no claim to it. Islam is actually the youngest of the three monotheistic religions. Judaism is the oldest, goes all the way back into antiquity. Then Christianity is the next, with Bethlehem, which is the birthplace of Jesus, which is also in Israel, although it's under Muslim control, and they've ran all the Christians out pretty much and wrecked the city. Yeah, the Muslims are good at doing that. They're very good at taking over the holy sites of other religions and then taking a crap on them and driving out the religions that actually have a claim to it, as they did with the Temple Mount, and they did that with Bethlehem. Islam came around in 756 AD, basically semi-official establishment date of Islam as a religion. So we're talking 7.5 centuries after the foundation of Christianity. And of course, Christianity was founded millennia after Judaism. Judaism is the oldest monotheistic religion in the world, certainly one of the oldest religions, period, in the world. The Israelis have long recognized that Jerusalem is their capital. And Donald Trump officially recognized Jerusalem as the capital of Israel and also directed his State Department to start making plans to move the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. This is also a huge, important step. And this decision is actually bigger than most people know. The decision itself, right, to simply declare that we recognize Jerusalem as the capital and we should move our embassy there, it's a pretty low-key and innocuous decision, right? I mean, on its face, it's not a big deal, right? But see, it is a big deal, and it's very courageous, not because of the actual decision that was made, but because of the opposition to it. The Democrat Party, the leftist establishment, and even a lot of Republicans, or at least a lot of establishment Republicans, they're opposed to this. Now, they weren't 6 months ago, right? 6 months ago, in June, 90 to nothing, there was a Senate resolution, or 94, zero opposed. I guess the other 10 were sleeping in after they got drunk last night. But nobody opposed this resolution where the Senate voted in favor of moving the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, of recognizing Jerusalem as the capital. Which, by the way, in every other country out there, our embassy is in their capital. But not in Israel. And back in 1995, they also had a similar resolution to recognize Jerusalem as the capital and move our embassy. And all the other past presidents, including Barack Obama, by the way, actually talked about this during the campaign. And Donald Trump did. And Donald Trump actually moved it. Instead of just doing this mealy-mouthed crap, saying that they're for it and putting it in their campaign and doing a Senate resolution. See, it's really easy to cast a vote on something that doesn't mean anything. But to actually take action and do it, now he's being hammered for that by the leftists. Which, that shows you their true colors. If you vote on something, but then when that thing actually happens physically, then you come out against it, well, that obviously shows that you weren't for it at all in the first place. And it shows the anti-Semitism of the left and how they give in to the Islamic theocracies, to the Islamic terrorists. I mean, look at the excuses they're given. Oh, 1.5 billion Muslims now are going to be crying out in rage against this declaration. I see. This is the same Islam that's the quote-unquote religion of peace, right? Yes, because nothing says religion of peace better than 1.5 billion Muslims all screaming death to Israel and death to the Jews because Trump. Because clearly the most sane and rational thing for the religion of peace to do is to start lobbing rockets at their Jewish neighbors because Trump. I'm sorry, but this is completely idiotic, idiotic point. That, oh, they're the religion of peace, but if you say words that offend them, they're all going to come kill you. Yes, the religion of peace is going to launch a worldwide fatwa against Donald Trump and every American and all the Jews, of course, because of his declaration. But yeah, they're the religion of peace. Right. I will believe that one in a second. No, so what you have here is that the leftists are in bed, maybe not literally, but they're certainly in line with the Islamists, who are anti-Israel, who are just anti-Jewish, they're anti-Semites, and they're against this move. And here's another thing, too. Oh, so the Muslims are gonna launch attacks. Well, they've been launching attacks without Jerusalem being a centerpiece for a long time. Okay, when the Jordanians controlled Jerusalem, there were still Islamic attacks on the Jews. Back in the 1920s, when the Ottoman Empire still controlled this place, it was when the British controlled the area of Israel, the Muslims still attacked the Jews. When they've had numerous ceasefires and peace agreements, it's always been the Arabs and Bedouins who call themselves Palestinians, because there's no such country called Palestine. There's no such people called Palestinians. That's a made-up term. They are Arabs and Bedouins who are Muslims. And Yasser Arafat, that piece of crap, he coined the term Palestinians. But there's never been a country or a culture called Palestine. The argument here is that, from the leftists, is that, oh, he does this, and they're all going to, because just this declaration with Jerusalem, they're all going to attack. I see. So we're supposed to give in to the angry pitchfork mob. No, this is called giving in to the demands of terrorists. Screw them, screw Abbas, screw the Arabs and Bedouins who call themselves Palestinians, screw the Muslim world, the way I see it. But you know what? Even that's disingenuous, because before Trump made this declaration, the Saudis, they actually went to the Palestinians and told them that, hey, knock this crap off, and we're going to start pulling funding and pulling support, especially if you lash out at Israel, And Egypt has maintained this standoff with the Palestinians, too. In other words, Donald Trump didn't just jump into this without talking to anybody. The Saudis and the Egyptians and the Jordanians were all nearby and don't particularly like Israel. But they knew that Trump was going to do this. He was talking to them about it. And they're okay with it. They're basically telling the Palestinians there and Abbas, hey, suck it up, quit whining, and this is what's going to happen. And the reason why is because they have a mutual enemy, and that's Iran, which is a Muslim country. Oh, yes, but for the Jews. No, no, if there were no Jewish people, no Christian people in the Middle East, the Muslims would still be killing each other. Okay, Iran and Saudi Arabia would still be going to war with each other. They're doing it right now. It's basically a proxy war between Iran and Saudi Arabia taking place in Yemen. Okay, they don't need the Jews and the Christians to get involved. It's Muslim on Muslim. They're still fighting each other. So this nonsense that, oh, the Jews, this worldwide Jewish conspiracy. No, that's just stupid. Not myself, I'm a Christian, okay? I'm not like some special pleader for any group. But this idiotic thing that, oh, if it wasn't for the Israel and the Jews in the region. No, the Muslims would still be killing each other. And they're doing it right now without Israel's involvement. Now, what's happening right now is you have the Saudis and the Egyptians and the Jordanians who are all really worried about Iran because Iran is helping Hamas, okay? They're giving funding and arms to Hamas and Hezbollah. The other Arab countries don't like that. They're really concerned about Iran because Iran's projecting its power. Okay, so what you have here is Israel is now being recognized in a much bigger sense. Because here's what Trump's thing does. By recognizing Jerusalem, it gives legitimacy to the state of Israel. See, when there was this back and forth and not recognizing Jerusalem in the past, that gave the Islamic terrorists a leg up, right? Because Jerusalem was not recognized. Israel was basically relegated to being like a second-class state, as it were. State being nation. And that gave them a leg up in terms of negotiations or an upper hand to try and swat at them, obviously a lot of times physically in terms of terrorist attacks. It basically advertised to all the Muslim terrorists out there that, hey, if we threaten violence to get our way, and look, the United States and other countries, they're doing that. That's exactly what they're doing by not recognizing Jerusalem and not siding with Israel. Well, Trump just took that away. Because guess what? The Neville Chamberlain approach, it doesn't work. We've been trying that for decades. We did the same thing with North Korea, the Neville Chamberlain approach. And it doesn't work. They take advantage of it. That's exactly what the Islamic terrorists have been doing right now with Israel. Is they've been taking advantage of politicians in the U.S. and Europe and all around, taking the Neville Chamberlain approach and relegating Israel to being some kind of second-class nation. When Donald Trump decided to cut through that BS and recognize Jerusalem, he put a stop to that. No, the violence is not going to change. All right, see, I saw a thing about, oh, now the Muslim Brotherhood and the Iranians are warning about attacks happening, renewed attacks. What they're really saying is that the Muslim Brotherhood and the Iranians are going to be orchestrating those attacks. Because that's what they do. They're a bunch of subhuman scum. Donald Trump did a great thing. And by the way, it's something that's uniquely Trump, too. Now, you can say that, well, Trump is uniquely Trump thing when he pulled out the Paris Climate Accord. Well, yes, but let's be honest. There have been U.S. presidents that have pulled us out of crappy international agreements before. So it's not uniquely Trump, right? Or him scaling back regulations. Well, again, there have been presidents in the past who have scaled back regulations. It's not unique to Trump to do that. This is. No other president before him has actually recognized Jerusalem as a capital of Israel. Not even Ronald Reagan. And by the way, I love Reagan. I'm a huge admirer of Ronald Reagan. But let's talk honestly here. Even Reagan didn't do this. This is something that's uniquely Donald Trump. And it's a great thing. It's a very courageous thing because of the opposition. And I'll say this with regards to Donald Trump on this. Donald Trump may not end up being the greatest president. I mean, I don't know. We still have time. You never know what the future holds. But I do think this, especially in light of this decision and him following through on his promises, doing what he said he would do, and his fighting back against the abhorrent opposition that's been pushed against him. Donald Trump may very well go down as one of the most courageous presidents in American history. He continues the trend that he's been doing. I very truly think that is what's going to happen with him. I commend Donald Trump for his decision to follow through on his promise and formally recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel and to start moving our embassy to Jerusalem. Excellent decision and way to stick it to the opposition, which I'm sure he had plenty even in his own cabinet. But he did a great thing and a very brave thing, and he should be commended for that. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a break here. When we come back on Thor's Hammer Radio, we're going to get into this absolutely atrocious Kate Steinle decision about the man who murdered her and just all this ridiculousness from it. So stay tuned. We'll be right back here on Thor's Hammer Radio. Back to Thor's Hammer Radio, getting started in the second part of our program here. Wow, the Kate Steinle decision. For those of you who are not familiar, and this was a shocking verdict, the man who murdered Kate Steinle, his name is Jose Inez Garcia Zarate. I hope I pronounced that right. Well, no, actually, I don't care, because he's an illegal alien. He's a piece of shit. All right, but... So, Jose Inez Garcia Zarate is the scumbag who killed Kate Steinle. So, he was put on trial. And, of course, the trial was about whether... Well, the jury was given basically three options to prosecute on, or to give the verdict on. So, there was first-degree murder was one, second-degree murder, or involuntary manslaughter. Now, the standard for first-degree murder, just giving you... This is a near and dear thing to me because I'm a police officer and I'm well involved with the criminal justice system. First-degree murder, you have to prove premeditated intent. Okay, so basically the killer had to intend directly to kill Kate Steinle. And you have to prove intention on it and premeditation, all that. That's very hard to prove, especially if the man doesn't even know her. And first-degree murder is very difficult. It's a very high standard. Second-degree murder. This is a bit lower standard because second-degree murder involves, like, what they refer to as crimes of passion, basically. In the heat of the moment, like, let's say, for example, a husband comes home and his wife is in bed with another man. And in the heat of the moment, the husband just kills the other man and his wife. The... premeditation was not there because before coming home, he wasn't planning on it, but he still ended up doing it. Another thing of second-degree murder is that you're deliberately causing potential death, but maybe not a specific person. Like, for example, if a person picks up a gun and just starts shooting into a crowd of people. Now, you can say, if you can prove the premeditation that they set up the killing ground... Like, for example, what happened with what James Hodgkinson did at Alexandria, Virginia, or the Las Vegas shooter. Well, he obviously intended to kill and he premeditated. But at the very least, you could prove second-degree murder that maybe he wasn't intending to kill a specific person, but if you shoot a loaded gun into a crowd of people, there's a very high possibility you're going to hit one of them and kill them. And then the lowest standard is involuntary manslaughter, which you can get charged with involuntary manslaughter if you're driving drunk and you hit someone and kill them. There was no premeditation and you probably weren't even intending, I'd hope not, to kill anyone, but you're driving drunk and you ended up killing somebody. That is involuntary manslaughter and you can be charged for that. The jury, in their ridiculousness, they found him not guilty on all three accounts. Okay, so the man shot into, you know, on a crowded pier, and it killed Kate Steinle, and he's not charged with any of them? Not even involuntary manslaughter? Oh, but they got him on illegal, well, a possession of a stolen firearm. I'm going to break down the thinking behind this. The defense, this was the defense's argument. The killer, he was interrogated by the police, and he changed his story multiple times. He admitted to the police that he killed Kate Steinle. And then he also said that he was shooting at a sea creature. Right, because that's what normal people do. When they're on a pier and they've got a gun with them, the normal thing that every American citizen, well, in his case, he wasn't a citizen, but what normal people do in general when they're sitting on a pier and they've got a gun with them is that they just pull it out and start shooting at sea lions. That's a normal thing. Right. Oh, and then he changed it and said that he stumbled across it. It was in a wrapped in some t-shirt. He picked it up and, oh, it magically went off. The gun magically went off. Are you fucking kidding me? Ladies and gentlemen, I'm a police officer. I go to work every single day with a fully loaded firearm with a round in the chamber ready to fire. I wear it on my hip all the time. And when I'm not in uniform and I'm off duty, I carry around a revolver, fully loaded, round in the chamber, ready to fire. Not once have I ever had a weapon go off just on its own, just shooting on its own. It doesn't happen. Okay, I've seen officers and other people literally drop their weapon from their hands and hit the ground, and it still didn't fire on its own. It doesn't happen. There's only one type of weapon system that has somewhat of a chance to fire off accidentally without the trigger being pulled. And that type of weapon is a shotgun. And the reason why is because of the trigger mechanism, the firing pin mechanism. It's a little sensitive. But that's the only weapon. A handgun or a rifle, it doesn't happen. You can step on it, it's not going to fire. You can drop it out of your hands onto the ground, it's not going to fire. I've been around plenty of weapon systems. I was in the army, I'm a police officer, I've dealt with weapons for a long time. And the weapon in question, which is a Sig Sauer, I own a Sig Sauer. And that was another thing that the defense brought up, is that, well, you know, a Sig Sauer can actually, it doesn't take much to fire it. Okay, a Sig Sauer has a single and a double action. A double action is when the hammer is forward and you have to pull with a little bit, quite a decent amount of pressure. Single action is when the hammer is cocked back and it requires less pressure on the trigger. The common denominator is you have to pull back on the trigger. It doesn't just fire on its own, like magically, oh, the gun's got a mind of its own, it's gonna fire. No, that's stupid. It doesn't do that. And then, oh, get this. After it magically went off on its own, when he just picked up, because that's what normal people do too, when they have an unknown object, and it turns out to be a gun wrapped in a t-shirt just sitting on a bench, normal people pick it up and it goes off. And then, because he was so scared of it, because he'd never been around firearms, right? Bear in mind, this is a guy who has been deported 5 times and he's been convicted of 7 different felonies. But he's never been around guns, he's afraid of them, okay. And then because this is what normal people do, is that he took that weapon that he was so afraid of, he picked it up and then he chucked it in the river and ran off. Because that's what a completely normal, innocent person does, is they throw the gun that they're afraid of, they chuck it in the river, and then they run away from the crime scene. Now, the interesting thing about this is that the whole 7 felonies. Yeah, you heard that right, 7. This man, were he an American citizen, would already be in prison. California has a 3 strikes rule. But not for this illegal. No, he was 7 different felonies. He was most of them drug-related. And by the way, what we're taught as police officers, and this is generally true, is that if a man is a drug dealer, man or woman, we can search for weapons because drug dealing and weapons go hand in hand. That's directly from the Supreme Court, by the way. You can look that up. And yet, this guy has been deported 5 times. He's a 7-time felon. And we're supposed to believe that he just came across it randomly. And he changed his story multiple times, which, by the way, that's a quick clue that when you change your story a bunch of times, you're probably lying. You're probably full of shit. when you change your story from, yeah, I killed her, to I was shooting at a sea lion, to I stumbled across it accidentally, the gun has a mind of its own and killed Kate Steinlein. And then, of course, part of their defense was, well, it actually ricocheted and hit her. Just because the weapon, just because the trajectory of the bullet, it ricochets and kills somebody, that doesn't mean that you weren't shooting at them. Okay? All that means is that he sucks at shooting, that his accuracy is crap. And then, yeah, the guy throws it in the river because he's afraid of it and runs off because, you know, that's what innocent people do. I looked through the facts that were... I looked through the argument that was presented and the facts in there, and it's just unbelievable. Like, that story is just not plausible at all. Oh, by the way, the weapon used, this Sig Sauer, was stolen from a federal agent. I think it was 3 to 4 days prior to the killing. And then the defense tries to say, well, there were about 5 or 6 people hanging around the bench before he sat down on it. Maybe they left it. Yes, because a Sig Sauer, which, by the way, is well over $1,000. The Sig Sauer that I have, which was actually a used weapon, cost me $1,100. It's not a cheap weapon. You know, somebody with a handgun that's cost that much, yeah, they're just going to leave it lying around like that. That's what you do. You know, normal people, when they want to get rid of something that could implicate them in a crime, the normal thing to do instead of trying to toss it down a sewer or in the river or something like that, no, they leave it wrapped up, just lying under a bench for somebody else to pick it up, like possibly a kid, or obviously in this case, I guess, the illegal alien. It's a complete fable. There's no way a rational human being could look at this and say, yeah, sure, that makes perfect sense. But, you know, there's kind of a joke amongst police officers that the 12 people who make up a jury are the 12 dumbest motherfuckers that you can find. Because both the prosecution and the defense has a hand in helping select the jury, and typically the defense wants the stupidest motherfuckers you can find. And that's the joke amongst police officers, is that you're being tried by the 12 stupidest people out there. Well, in this case with San Francisco, it looks like that's clearly the case. And that's saying something for radical leftist San Francisco, too. They don't convict him on even involuntary manslaughter, but they give him the mandatory minimum for possession of a stolen firearm. By the way, on that count, thinking about this one too. So they buy his completely bullshit argument, his fable, that he just came across this weapon by accident. Okay, well, if that's true, if he just came across this weapon completely by accident, it just went off magically in his hands and he got rid of it immediately, why the hell would they charge him with possession of a stolen firearm if he came across this accidentally and he had nothing else to do with it besides that? Why would they charge him with possession if it was all an accident? That doesn't make any sense. But this is what it comes to. Now, thankfully, the Justice Department is pursuing federal charges, and they're demanding he be turned over and at the very least get rid of his ass, like deport him. This is good. Now, obviously, we have this thing about double jeopardy, right? You can't be charged twice for the exact same crime. So what I believe the Justice Department doing is they're pursuing federal charges with things kind of along the same lines, but they can't legally charge him with the exact same crime because of double jeopardy. There are some people that don't get this. They think that, oh, okay, if you make a mistake with sentencing or your conviction, well, okay, just put him on trial again and a different jury. It doesn't work that way. It does not work that way. You're not allowed to try somebody twice for the same crime. For example, there were a lot of people that were really pissed off at the Casey Anthony verdict, which, for those of you who remember, it was a couple years ago now at this point, but Casey Anthony got off the hook for the charge of her murdering her young daughter. You can't charge her again later on for the exact same crime. But what the feds are doing now under Jeff Sessions is, I believe they're bringing a different set of charges against this animal that killed Kate Steinle, and hopefully getting his sorry ass out of the country, because that absolutely needs to go, and he needs to be banned from ever coming back. I mean, I just looked through the facts of the case, I just looked through the completely nonsensical and idiotic arguments, And just knowing what I know about the law and about firearms and how they work, the standards for the different types of murder and killing, all that, it just, none of this makes sense. You'd have to be the biggest moron in the world to buy his constantly changing story and the idiotic defense arguments. Either that, or you're just doing this to try and stick it to Trump. As if, what, Donald Trump even had anything to do with the Kate Steinle killing? No, he didn't. But they're trying to make this about Trump. The defense even brought up stuff about Donald Trump attacking, you know, quote-unquote immigrants and immigration. It has nothing to do with Donald Trump. This is about what this Jose asshole, this is about what he did in killing this young woman, Kate Steinle. It's just a real sad day that a jury would be so stupid and that a defense would be such scum. And look, I get it in terms of the defense. That's their job, to represent these people. This defense attorney, when he started, after the trial, started going on and railing against Trump and immigration and all that. I mean, he's a low-life scum, this defense attorney for this animal who murdered Kate Steinle. I can only hope that the Department of Justice and bring in a new set of charges and getting this piece of crap out of the country. I only hope that we can do at least some amount of justice for Kate Steinle's family. And as for Kate Steinle herself, may God protect her soul and may she rest in peace. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'm going to wrap it up with the third segment of my program here. So stay tuned. We'll be right back here on Thor's Hammer Radio. Alright everybody, welcome back to Thor's Hammer Radio, and the final segment of my program here. Well, I could get into, maybe some things about sexual harassment, but honestly, why? We already know that Roy Moore lost the election, and Doug Jones is in. By the way, the Roy Moore accusers seem to have disappeared. We already know that Al Franken, well, he announced his resignation, but he's still in the Senate. And we have new stuff coming out every single day. You can't even keep track of it. But by the way, it's stupid. I'm not interested in that crap. I'm really not. And then the Mueller investigation. Well, I've gone on about the Mueller investigation before. He's got a lot to answer for. With this Peter Strzok, who was sleeping around with another FBI agent. That is, he was cheating on his wife with her. And these 10,000 text messages. This guy's a Hillary hack. And then this other guy, I believe, Orr, and was it him or his wife that was employed by this Fusion GPS that did the fake Russian dossier? Or Mueller with these thousands of Trump emails, and Trump's lawyer is contesting, saying, hey, he got this illegally. But I've talked about the Mueller investigation before. Quite frankly, it shouldn't even have happened in the first place. You need to have a crime first, then do a criminal investigation. That's how the law works. But I want to get into something. This is huge. This is from Politico. I know it's Politico, but actually the author, the journalist here, Josh Meyer, he's a real journalist. And he's been digging into the Iran deal. And this is a massive bombshell. And I am going to link to this on my website. So here's the story. The secret backstory of how Obama let Hezbollah off the hook. Yeah, chew on that for a bit. How Obama let Hezbollah, a terrorist organization, a Muslim terrorist organization, off the hook. In its determination to secure a nuclear deal with Iran, the Obama administration derailed an ambitious law enforcement campaign that was targeting drug trafficking by the Iranian-backed terrorist group Hezbollah, even as it was funneling cocaine into the United States, according to a Politico investigation. The campaign, dubbed Project Cassandra, was launched in 2008 after the Drug Enforcement Administration, the DEA, amassed evidence that Hezbollah had transformed itself from a Middle East-focused military and political organization. They're a fucking terrorist group. Let's not be PC here. Into an international crime syndicate that some investigators believed was collecting $1 billion a year from drug and weapons trafficking, money laundering, and other criminal activities. And in fact, one of the money laundering scheme that they go into is they had something about a used car scam that was going all throughout the world. Over the next 8 years, agents working out of a top-secret DEA facility in Chantilly, Virginia, used wiretaps, undercover operations, and informants to map Hezbollah's illicit networks with the help of 30 U.S. and foreign security agencies. They followed cocaine shipments, some from Latin America to West Africa and onto Europe and the Middle East, and others through Venezuela and Mexico to the United States. They tracked the river of dirty cash as it was laundered by, among other tactics, buying American used cars and shipping them to Africa. And with the help of some key cooperating witnesses, the agents traced the conspiracy, they believed, to the innermost circle of Hezbollah and its state sponsors in Iran. And this is where the Iranian part gets really important. Remember that Iran deal that Obama was doing? This ties into it. And here it goes. But as Project Cassandra reached higher into the hierarchy of the conspiracy, Obama administration officials threw an increasingly insurmountable series of roadblocks in its way. According to interviews with dozens of participants who in many cases spoke for the first time about events shrouded in secrecy and a review of government documents and court records, when Project Cassandra leaders sought approval for some significant investigations, prosecutions, arrests, and financial sanctions, officials at the Justice and Treasury Departments delayed, hindered, or flat-out rejected their requests. The Justice Department declined requests by Project Cassandra and other authorities to file criminal charges against major players such as Hezbollah's high-profile envoy to Iran, a Lebanese bank that allegedly laundered billions in alleged drug profits, and a central player in the U.S.-based cell of the Iranian paramilitary Quds Force, which is the paramilitary wing of the Iranian Revolutionary Guard. And the State Department rejected requests to lure high-value targets to countries where they could be arrested. This is incredible. So you've got this agency, this Project Cassandra, which is a task force that's comprised of, you've got your intel guys, like your CIA types, and then your law enforcement types, like your DEA and the like. They go in and arrest, right? And they were tracking Hezbollah, which is more than just, according to this, more than just a terrorist organization, than an Islamic terrorist organization. They actually took over a drug trade and became this worldwide criminal cartel trading drugs for weapons. And not just like your rifles and rockets. They were digging up stuff. They were bringing in stuff like weapons grade, like fission material and helicopters and stuff. For not just them, but the Iranians. Okay, so they're doing stuff for the Iranians and also for other players in here. And I'll get into that deeper in this story. I'm not going to read the whole thing because it is actually a really long piece, but I'm going to hit kind of the main points. But I'm going to link to this so you can read it yourself. This was a policy decision. It was a systematic decision, said David Asher, who helped establish and oversee Project Cassandra as a Defense Department illicit finance analyst. They serially ripped apart this entire effort that was very well supported and resourced, and it was done from the top down. Obama had entered office in 2009, promising to improve relations with Iran as part of a broader rapprochement with the Muslim world. On the campaign trail, he had asserted repeatedly that the Bush administration's policy of pressuring Iran to stop its illicit nuclear program wasn't working. Say what you want about Bush, but his sanctions against Iran, they were working. And Obama destroyed all that. The man that would become Obama's top counterterrorism advisor and then CIA director, John Brennan, who's a communist, as is Obama, went further. He recommended in a policy paper that the next president has the opportunity to set a new course for relations between the two countries through not only direct dialogue, but a greater assimilation of Hezbollah into Lebanon's political system. Yeah, that's just what we need, John. Hezbollah, a terrorist group, getting more assimilated into politics. By May 2010, Brennan, then assistant to the president for the Homeland Security and Counterterrorism, confirmed in a speech that the administration was looking for ways to build up moderate elements within Hezbollah. They're a fucking Islamic terrorist organization, idiot. There are no moderate elements. Goes on, Hezbollah is a very interesting organization, Brennan told a Washington conference. You see what a dumb shit this guy is? Saying it had evolved from a purely terrorist organization to a militia and, ultimately, a political party with representatives in the Lebanese parliament and cabinet. What a great foundation there, John, going from a terrorist group to taking over the government. Great fucking role models. There is certainly the elements of Hezbollah that are truly a concern to us what they're doing, Brennan said, and what we need to do is find ways to diminish their influence. Again, this is called stupidity on print and spoken word. If you have moderates, which don't exist, and the violent ones, the violent ones are going to win. Especially if it's within your own ranks there. Because they're the ones that are going to exert the power. Moving on. The administration's willingness to envision a new role for Hezbollah in the Middle East, combined with its desire for a negotiated settlement to Iran's nuclear program, translated into a reluctance to move aggressively against the top Hezbollah operatives, according to Project Cassandra members. Lebanese arms dealer Ali Fayyad, a suspected top Hezbollah operative whom agents believe reported to Russian President Vladimir Putin as a key supplier of weapons to Syria and Iraq, was arrested in Prague, Czech Republic, in the spring of 2014. But for the nearly 2 years Fayyad was in custody, top Obama administration officials declined to apply serious pressure on the Czech government to extradite him to the United States, even as Putin was lobbying aggressively against it. Let me stop right there. Okay, right here. Ali Fayyad, this what Lebanese arms dealer, this Hezbollah operative, reported to Vladimir Putin. People understand to and understand that Hezbollah is the puppet masters there are the Iranians. But people do realize that Russia and Iran are allies, right? People do know that. They know that Russia has been giving nuclear material to the Iranians. They've also been giving surface-to-air missiles to the Iranians, too, to protect their sites. They're not just allies on paper. They're also physically working together. They're a military alliance, and they've also established an alliance with Bashar al-Assad in Syria. You've got like a triad alliance going on there. All these leftists and Democrats who claim, oh, we're against Vladimir Putin, bullshit. Bullshit they are. You cannot be super pro-Iran in the Iranian deal and also, quote, anti-Russia. Doesn't happen. You're either with both because they're in bed together or you're against both. It's one or the other. Russia and Iran are working together, and Hezbollah is working as a criminal front organization to help the Iranians, and of course themselves as well. And Russia and Syria and also Venezuela and these other kind of like basically communist or radical jihadist countries, they're benefiting from this. It goes on. Fayyad, who had been indicted in U.S. courts on charges of planning the murders of U.S. government employees, attempting to provide material support to a terrorist organization, and attempting to acquire, transfer, and use anti-aircraft missiles, was ultimately sent to Beirut. Okay, so what happened here is that the Obama administration did not apply really any pressure to get him extradited from the Czech Republic to the United States. So the Czechs released him, he goes to Beirut, and he is now believed to be back in Syria, helping our militants in Syria and also elsewhere with Russian heavy weapons. Just wonderful. Project Cassandra and members say administration officials also blocked or undermined their efforts to go after other top operatives, such as one nicknamed the Ghost. And apparently he was one of the biggest cocaine traffickers in the world. And a major supplier of conventional and chemical weapons for use by Syrian President Bashar Assad against his people. In other words, those chemical weapons that Assad's been using, guess what? The Hezbollah operatives that have been acquiring it for him, this group Project Cassandra was tracking them, and the Obama administration put the kibosh on it. Why? To appease the fucking Iranians. Going on, the administration also rejected repeated efforts by Project Cassandra members to charge Hezbollah's military wing as an ongoing criminal enterprise under a federal mafia-style racketeering statute. That'd be the RICO statute. But basically, if you can get members in that organization on individual criminal charges, but wrapping up into they're all part of the same criminal organization, you can charge everybody under a RICO statute. And you can put basically the whole bunch in prison. That's how they get these big-time, like, criminal mafia organizations. And, of course, former Obama admin officials declined to comment on individual cases. But the State Department condemned the check decision. Yeah, they didn't do anything to actually pressure them. They just sat on their hands, and then when they turned them over, then they admonished them with a wagging finger. Typical Obama. Sit on his ass, do nothing, take this. Just basically sit on the sidelines and then do some moral grandstanding and finger wagging to make it look like he tried to do something. He did this his entire presidency. He did the same thing in the Ukraine when he did nothing when Putin stepped over the red line. He did nothing with the Russian reset. He did nothing when Putin came into Syria. Nothing when Assad used chemical weapons. He didn't do a damn thing. I've said this before on my podcast and I'll say it again. Barack Obama was Vladimir Putin's best friend and ally that he could want. Of course the Russians would want to continue the Obama legacy via Hillary Clinton. They would not have wanted Donald Trump. Collusion between Trump and Russia made no sense. The Justice Department, they pointed out, never filed corresponding U.S. criminal charges against the suspects arrested in Europe, including one prominent Lebanese businessman formerly designated by the Treasury Department for using his direct ties to Hezbollah, commercial and terrorist elements, to launder bulk shipments of illicit cash for the organization throughout Asia, Europe, and the Middle East. One Obama Treasury official, Catherine Bauer, in little-noticed written testimony presented last February to the House Committee on Foreign Affairs, acknowledged that under the Obama administration, these Hezbollah-related investigations were tamped down for fear of rocking the boat with Iran and jeopardizing the nuclear deal. As a result, some Hezbollah operatives were not pursued via arrests, indictments, or treasury designations that would have blocked their access to U.S. financial markets, according to Bauer, a career treasury official who served briefly in its Office of Terrorist Financing as a senior policy advisor for Iran before leaving in late 2015. Other Hezbollah facilitators arrested in France, Colombia, Lithuania have not been extradited or indicted in the U.S. Within months, task force officials said, Project Cassandra was all but dead. Some of its most senior officials, including Jack Kelly, the veteran DEA supervisor agent who created and led the task force, were transferred to other assignments. And Asher himself left the task force long before that, after the Defense Department said his contract would not be renewed. As a result, the U.S. government lost insight into not only drug trafficking and other criminal activity worldwide, but also into Hezbollah's illicit conspiracies with top officials in the Iranian, Syrian, Venezuelan, and Russian governments, all the way up to Nicolas Maduro in Venezuela, Bashar al-Assad in Syria, and Vladimir Putin in Russia, according to former task force members and other current and former U.S. officials. Understand the gravity of this. And this is about as far as I'm going to go because, again, this is a really long article, but I very much encourage you to read the whole thing. I'm going to link to it on my website. But think about the gravity of this. Barack Obama was literally providing cover, whether it was through stonewalling or just inaction or just flat-out denial. He was providing cover for some of the worst dictators on the planet, not just a Muslim terrorist organization that was not just conducting, you know, your typical jihadist terrorist activities. They're also doing drug running, weapon smuggling, laundering money. But again, he's providing cover for people like Maduro, Assad, Putin, Ayatollah Khomeini in Iran. He's providing cover for the worst dictators and human rights abusers on the planet. Obama was. Not Trump, Barack Obama. And you want to tell me that Trump is the bad guy here? I don't think so. This is Barack Obama 100%. And why? For the damn Iran deal. For his fucking legacy. His legacy of shit. Alright, ladies and gentlemen. Well, that's going to wrap up my podcast for today. I hope you enjoyed listening to it, and I very much very much encourage you to read this political article by Josh Meyer. If you read nothing else this for the rest of this year, read this article. It's really important, and your mind will be blown, and I imagine you'll probably be infuriated too. Well, I'm going to try and be a little more prompt about my future podcast, but anyway, I appreciate you, for those of you who stayed to listen, and until next time, I'm Alex Thorson here with Thor's Hammer Radio.
Face the hammer.
Listen, everybody.